for incentives, which may have been inappropriate. So I think that we do have to pay attention to how the incentives are structured and how the formulas are structured. And I also think that there's an issue that hasn't, that doesn't often get addressed, and that is when there, if a program is intending to reduce racial and ethnic disparities, then minority-serving population, minority-serving providers that have a lot of the minority populations that you're interested in, there may be some programs that may be targeted towards those institutions for this particular kind of incentive program, so that if the provider doesn't have a lot of minorities, then they wouldn't be eligible for those sorts of incentives. So I think there are a number of ways to go about it. I don't think any of them have really been explored in great detail, and I'm sensitive to the issue that you raised.
And I do think we suggested what some organizations are doing that we've seen, which is, you know, rolling up to white, non-white. Not optimal, but, you know, that's one thing. Rolling up multiple years. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a firm believer that, you know, if you have 20 minorities or, you know, 90%, that you should be able to show that everybody's getting high-quality care regardless of their background. And so saying non-applicable or sample size is small, I think there are things that we should be able to do that really, you know, put equity at the center of quality measurement, regardless of that sample size. So those are some of the things that we've seen.
Let me just add a comment. Would you recommend, I think non-applicable is actually a good solution if the numbers aren't stable, but would you recommend actually just publishing the numbers, both the numerator as well as the denominator, so that people viewing the reports can make their own judgment about the sample size?
I know it looks like Joe and I disagree, but I think if the numbers are not, and I think we have some statisticians in the room, if the numbers are not statistically significant, I don't think it's fair to the organization to report the numbers. I don't think it's fair that we should expect the public to make a decision on the statistical stability of the number. But I also agree with Joe that to the extent, maybe we're not doing enough. Maybe we're saying, okay, in this case, we're going to clump together 2 or 3 years, roll up some of the populations and report the numbers in that way. I feel a little uncomfortable in simply reporting them, you know, what if they have 2 or 3 minorities or what if, you know, in a particular group. It can get very anecdotal at that point, and I don't think would do justice, in my own opinion. I don't, we don't always agree on everything.
Thank you. First of all, thanks for this. I thought it was really thoughtful. I found it really useful, and I thought it was really well done. So, again, thank you. I had a few questions related to socioeconomic position. The first is, I wonder if you could help us a little bit more with a very operational definition of that. I think socioeconomic position is something we all understand, but when it comes down to actually measuring it at an organizational level, I think we need a little bit more help. So I think you allude to income as a measure of this, but I think that there's some real practical problems in measuring this in minority populations or using this in minority populations, and I think it has a lot of weaknesses. You know, a lot of minority people have income that they won't report to us because it's, one, it's illegal, or two, it might kick them over into a copay that they wouldn't otherwise have. Second is the opposite problem, which is that, you know, we certainly see patients who have little or no income. I'm thinking of a patient I had trouble getting bypass surgery for because he didn't have a job. He didn't have a job because he just sold his share of his car dealership. And so I think, you know, income doesn't has some weaknesses, and I'd love some more help measuring socioeconomic position. Second thing is one of the problems is that disparities might not exist within an organization because the disparities exist at the door. So, and I'm thinking of large academic centers that have can report no disparities based on race, socioeconomic position, what have you, but they have, let's say, 5% of their patients are minorities or of low socioeconomic position, and they are situated in communities or neighborhoods where 20 or 30% of the residents of their catchment area are minority patients. And that, I wonder if you could help us understand if that's a worthwhile thing to measure or to deal with. And then the final thing is, I wondered what you thought about socioeconomic position itself as a basis for disparities. That you kind of touch on this a little bit when you talk about interaction terms. You know, I applaud you for even taking it on because it's so difficult. But I'm a little bit concerned that socioeconomic position may be driving more of these disparities than we would like to think. I'm thinking of some anecdotes of patients telling me that their status as having Medicaid, they felt, drove their care at other institutions. In other words, you're a Medicaid patient, therefore you are X, Y, and Z, therefore I'm doing this to you. Or, you know, I often see providers react to patients based on things that are strongly related to socioeconomic position. So, you know, simple things, dentition, for instance. You hear other providers talk, refer to a patient's two or three teeth as a basis for the way they're reacting to them. And so I just wonder what you think and whether or not that's something that this group should be thinking more about. So sorry for the long number of questions.
Great. A lot of meat to chew on there. Let me start with your second point first about disparities existing at the door. I think it's a very interesting point, and I draw back on some research I did as a graduate student, believe it or not, where we were looking at policies about what's that? Yeah, that wasn't that long ago. We were looking at policies around bad debt and free care, and we found that the hospitals in the fairly well-to-do communities had fairly liberal policies, and the ones that were in the poor communities had much stricter policies. And why? That's because they didn't have a lot of people coming in the door that actually required a bad debt and free care. And I think the same sort of thinking could go around providers in high minority and low minority populations that we do have to be a little careful about. That if there's a low minority population, there aren't that many racial ethnic minorities to deal with. They may have been better resourced and be able to really address those equity issues and come out looking pretty good, whereas the provider that has, you know, 10 or 20 different languages to deal with and you know, a very diverse population could be very complex and could run into a lot of challenges. So I think that it's a very good point. I don't know what the policy response is, but I think it's something that is worth thinking about. As far as socioeconomic position, I mean, I think there are experts in this room that are know better than I do about how to measure those things. And for example, the literature doesn't even agree on the terminology. You know, socioeconomic status is the one that most people are familiar with. You know, it certainly can be the basis for some disparities in terms of measurement. You know, the usual things that people talk about are income, education, and occupation. Those are the three kind of classic ways to measure socioeconomic status. And I would also say that you might even use some ecological measures. In other words, the socioeconomic status of the community in which the patient lives in. I think some community-level variables would also be important in terms of identifying the socioeconomic status of the patient. You know, when I teach about this, you know, it's hard to collect all that data. Some of it is unreliable. Income in particular has a lot of non-reporting issues. You know, probably education or even the education of the parent may be the best single signal that we could get, especially if you think about, again, trying to use one measure to address everything. But, I mean, especially if you think about what might impact a patient's use of resources and the way they use resources and that sort of thing, I think would be a good way to go. But it's there's no great way to do it.
I would just add that, you know, there's no doubt that socioeconomic status drives a lot of disparities, but we still know that there's a significant chunk that's unrelated to socioeconomic status. And, you know, as Joel mentioned, David Williams has written eloquently about issues related to, you know, wealth and deprivation index. I mean, there's 10 ways to slice this. In Massachusetts, from a very practical standpoint, we collect highest level of education as a proxy for SES and combine that with insurance status to try to get some sense. But even as far as I think we are around monitoring and measurement, we haven't begun to stratify any of that yet. We're collecting it, and so we're still at kind of, you know, the early stages of this. So I think that's going to be have to be kind of a best fit choice for the group.
I did hear just today that the governor of Wisconsin did not go to college, so I don't know what his socioeconomic status would be, but you'd have to consider occupation in that case.
Thank you. I think we have enough time to probably cover all the folks who have questions or comments now, and that's going to be it. Then we'll be on for a break. Sean?
Well, I'd maybe just pause and ask, what is the plan? There's question and answer now, but then there's going to be a series of recommendations. There will be time for discussion of each individual recommendation.
I think ultimately we're going to be looking for some consensus on this, on the points and the recommendations around this paper, and our discussion will also be formative and bring up other points that will consolidate. We're not going to do this at the end of each segment, but there will be some
this type of discussion coherent. Is basically the plan for the day. I'm just wondering if I ask a question now or don't ask a question now, we're basically coming back to these issues later in the day in any case. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would ask it now and take advantage of the...
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, some of my questions may be a little, you know, too much detail or something like that, but I suppose I...
In that case, if it's granular, getting more granular detail, we are going to have many other opportunities. So,
okay. Well, I mean, I guess I just start with a couple comments or questions. I really did learn a lot from the report. I appreciated it. One comment I would make is that there's other sources that you drew from in this report that also presented guidelines, and I think it's probably worth any places where your guidelines were different from other published guidelines. I've looked at one that was specifically, I think, published by the National Center for Health Statistics related to the methods used for the AHRQ disparities report, and have 14 guidelines. And I look across, and there's really a lot of consistency between them, and your approach is very similar to theirs, and it's very nice delineation of the issues. That there are a couple where I noticed, okay, well, the one person in this report made a recommendation that was kind of different from what you guys came up with, and I could mention them or not, or just come back to them later, but it's probably worth having some focus on why your recommendation was slightly departed from other approaches that were out there. I think a lot of the of your recommendations focus on reporting issues and issues. One big issue is when you do things two different ways, and the results can really depend on some subtlety of how you do the analysis, whether you report ratios or differences. And I think one of the recommendations is, well, the only real way to address that is to report things both ways when they contradict one another. And I think that is, I agree with that approach. But ultimately, when the call for measures goes out, they're not really focusing on, well, how do we report these measures? They're really saying, what is the measure? They're saying, basically, tell us the numerator and the denominator. And I'm not exactly sure what, for something that will be submitted to NQF for endorsement that's related to disparities, what will that look like? Will that be basically, here is a measure, and what the developer's proposing is basically look at this stratified by subgroups, or will they be explicit and say we think the ratio of the usage rates for this procedure across this population X and this population Y? If it's a situation where results may depend on whether you're reporting ratios or differences, is there going to be a separate measure that's one's looking at ratios and one's looking at differences, or are those both going into the same measure? So I just think there's some, how some of these recommendations get implemented in kind of the way things are set up at NQF will take some work.
So I'm hoping that, I don't know, you guys or the committee or NQF can do something about this issue that's actually come up for many years, is around the CAP survey, and that obviously it's not a perfect tool for patient satisfaction, and we have to get at it different ways. But certainly one issue is that it's only being done in English and Spanish right now, and there are actually versions, translated versions in other languages that are not being used because it hasn't been certified by NCQA. So, and they're looking at resources, they talk about resources and how to do that, but it feels like fairly simple, just, I mean, if it's a resource issue and getting them the translated version certified, since they're already translated, issue to address to be able to, because, you know, if we take the CAP survey and stratify by race, ethnicity, it's not going to yield very much if people who don't speak English and Spanish, who can't read English and Spanish, can't fill it out. So it just feels like low-hanging fruit that we can kind of get at fairly soon. So I don't know if anyone can help with that. But.
No, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think we're struggling with this as a hospital right now because I'm, you know, the, I think RHCAPS is only done in English and Spanish, certainly. And we did actually, just a quick anecdote, we did a couple years back, because of our unhappiness with that, we did a survey, both telephone, multimodal telephone and at point of care and like, around patient experience, where we used some tools like the Commonwealth Fund Minority Health Survey, the Kaiser Family Foundation Survey on Race and Discrimination. We created our own validated survey to get our patient experience, oversampling minority patients. And, you know, we picked up all types of things that HCAPS never picked up. And so I think, I and this gets back to your point as well, which is I strongly feel like we need to push the boundaries there and think of creative ways to get at patient experience. Now, we're thinking of, do we need to do a survey like that once every year, once every 2 years, to get at these voices we're leaving behind? I think it's challenging from a policy standpoint because I think as if people's numbers look good, they don't want to tinker with them, right? If they don't want to tinker with HCAPS, if everything looks nice, and so what's their motivation? But I do believe as advocates, we need to continue to push that and figure out ways in which we can do the easy things like translate some of these surveys. But also, I think it's not only going to be just surveys. I think we're going to need to, you know, we have patient and family councils. We have, you know, is it focus groups? Is it, you know, other ways of getting these voices at the table? Again, things that I think we should be doing in parallel.
And I would just support the idea of getting other ways of collecting data for the simple reason that it's not only a language issue, but it's also a literacy issue where I think some of our disparities occur, and that it's, you know, it's kind of who's not here, raise your hand. It's very difficult to assess what kind of disparities occur among the population that has the literacy problem.
Just one comment to weigh in before we go to the next one. This is exactly one of those issues I would hope that we would potentially put in a parking lot for us to talk about tomorrow. I think there is a real opportunity, potentially, for example, as the NQF evaluation process to say that the patient survey, and this is where you guys would come in, is there, if a certain population rises beyond X percent of the population, there should be a validated survey. And if there's ways for us to push that envelope, I'd want us to return to that point. Now, right, a second.
A couple of comments. Going back to the social determinants, I think one of the things that's very important, certainly in the Southwest, is lay interventionists. For example, promotores de salud and their use, I think it's a very important point. Also, as Norman said earlier, as a pharmacist, I have to say that really looking at pharmacodynamics is very important, both in the Asian and the Black population. And the Hispanic, someone may be diagnosed but is poorly controlled. Also, too, I think it's very important, is the first level of health-seeking behavior. I'm a hospital pharmacist for many, many years, but my brother's a community pharmacist, and I actually sat and watched him one day, and he did 21 patients that he sent literally to the health clinic because coming to the pharmacy was the first step, and either taking blood pressure or whatever, he was the one who intervened. And I think often your community pharmacists are often not looked at. Also on the language proficiency, also I think really drilling down, and the paper you may be sending us may address this, but I deal with a lot of people who speak Spanish but can't read or write it. So I think that's very, very important. And, you know, measuring the impact of visual aids, and unfortunately we do not have enough visual aids to help with some of those issues. The other point I think is very important and is that lack of diversity in a lot of, and measuring that in organizational leadership, I think measuring that in how they view disparities and the importance of disparities in the organization is very critical, and in particularly now where people are looking at, quote, indigent care versus disparities, that has kind of taken the forefront. So I think that's very important. And also leadership, not only leadership, but the care providers. So I really think those are all important points to discuss.
Thanks also for a fantastic paper. A question for Joel and Joe, and maybe also you, Helen.
that there's sort of another possibility that you maybe spent two sentences on, but which pretty much is the simple solution that finishes the work of the committee in half a day as opposed to a year. Just want to just get your thoughts in terms of, you know, why you didn't explore it further. Which is basically, why not just use all the basic measures which are being used more generally for quality improvement and stratify, in this case, by race, ethnicity, language. You can then supplement with a few things. So, you know, there's existing measures like interpreter services, or you mentioned painful long bone fractures, or Norman's point that there's going to be sort of a research agenda in terms of, you know, more disparity specific things. But the vast bulk of measures, you know, probably more than 90-95%, would currently fall in this is the current measures. I mean, you talk about disparity sensitive, but I mean, they really be a subset of what that already exists, really. And this approach, I mean, is simple in terms of, well, you know, you just stratify by race, ethnicity, language. It's flexible. So Lourdes's point about, well, you know, the key measures may differ depending upon geographic region, population, et cetera. So if you look at everything and it's stratifying by your key variables, you'll capture it. In any case, as Don was saying, the sample size issue is going to drastically reduce whatever measures you come down to, and so it's not going to make much difference. Then this sort of important philosophical point that I think one thing we do want to try to avoid doing is this issue of marginalizing disparities. You know, so, well, you know, we do our mainline quality improvement, and then you have these, you know, disparity measures, and then we'll think about disparities for these measures, as opposed to thinking about disparities in all of our patients for, you know, everything we do in quality. And there's also been this sort of implementation simplicity issue. This may be a question for you also, Helen, in terms of, you know, the users of this, whether they're policymakers or any organizations or something like the NQF map that Joe was part of the steering committee for, it's a much simpler argument to say, well, look, you know, I have a couple principles. Whatever you do, stratify by race, ethnicity, language, add on these additional disparity-specific measures. It's a much easier argument to make than us arguing to, you know, a broader committee, it's a more complicated process in terms of finding disparity-sensitive measures and go through this, and it's a much more involved argument as opposed to two or three simple principles. So why isn't sort of a simple solution the way to go as opposed to something that's going to be a lot more effort or, you know, a lot more consultation as opposed to, you'd be pretty much in the same place probably. So what's the advantage?
Well, I think, I mean, I'm a firm believer that, and I've been an advocate for that particular position, that one thing to do, and I think the approach for us to not marginalize, is to say we should stratify everything by race, ethnicity, language. So, I mean, I think if what came out of this committee was that recommendation, I'd certainly be very, very happy with that. So I wouldn't recommend this over that. I think that is the gold standard, and that's a way that moves away from this kind of, well, this is the equity bucket here, to, you know, everything for every patient who we manage in any way, that there should be quality and equity. So this is a plan B, if you will. I do think that the off-the-shelf measures, which came up a bit before, we do miss certain things that we haven't paid attention to. I think that's where we call the sentinel measures might provide opportunity there. But I think if this committee said, well, stratify everything, plus we need to look at new areas, that for me would be a very reasonable recommendation. Now, certainly there's the actionable, feasible lens that needs to be applied, which is that's something that you all need to debate. I'll just say personally, I'm an incrementalist. I do believe that we need to kind of crawl before we walk, before we run. And I think this committee would go a long way by just thinking about developmentally where we could go. So that might be a great recommendation. The question is, how actionable is it? I don't know. That's something that I think would require some exploration from this group.
I would also say that the point you raise brings up the tension between some sort of overall measure on everything, on the universe, everything that we collect. You know, how does everybody do, versus trying to look at a focused set of measures. And I guess this is your challenge, I assume, for, you know, what is the goal, the end result for NQF in this exercise? And so you can imagine that some provider somewhere gets a score for how they do on disparities or equity of care. And is that based on just kind of, you know, all 700 measures, or is it based on a focused set of measures that people, I think, can focus on and better understand? But I think eventually, you know, we do certainly need to collect or to stratify all the measures by race, ethnicity, to see what's going on. Maybe there are some that are worth focusing on. I think that's probably your decision.
Briefly to respond as well, that's actually part of the reason we decided it was time to do this project, since we had this old set of criteria that picked some and left some on the table. And the real question, one of my questions going into this is, does does this need to be anything? It should just be routine that NQF would request that all measures be stratified. I do think the sentinel concept is intriguing because at least then you say, okay, we recognize there's a universe of measures out there, but we know these are areas with known disparities. If nothing else, publicly report these. I mean, I think there are some strategies there that probably do get closer to the measure selection piece. That, you know, the measures application partnership is trying to think through. But I'd also be curious to hear Ernest's comments as you think about it. This was a lot of the discussions about the NHQR versus the NHDR, just saying let's just take the same quality measures and stratify them rather than coming up with a different set. But welcome, Riley.
I'm going to take the prerogative of the co-chair and suggest that we just take a break. We've obviously got a number of questions here. We can come back to the questions after the break because there are five or six more flags that are up and it's just going to go on for a while. And Joe's raising his hand too.
I just wanted to say Emilio, one of our co-authors is on the phone. I just wanted to let people know that. And Emilio, I don't know if you just wanted to say hello to the group. You just shot me a note as well. No, he's on and maybe he's on mute. Okay. Well, he's on the line. So just, you know, he'll be on to answer questions as well later with us.
Okay.
And he's on. So anyway, we can. He'll be involved later on in the Q&A.
Okay.
Joe, you had a question?
No. I was just wondering if, if he's on, can we not hear him? If he's trying to say something, it'd be great if he could just sort of chime in. Give him for 2 minutes. No? Joe, are you there?
Yeah, he's there. He just texted me. So. All right. Well, the Q&A, we can. He's available. I just wanted to
make sure. Before we break, I just wanted to have Ernie, if you want to introduce yourself, and just there's a point of disclosure also.
Okay, I'll do this later. Yes, I'm Ernie Moy. I'm with the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and I've been working on the disparities report since the very first one, and I'm obviously therefore very interested in how this all turns out.
Okay, we're on break for 10 minutes.